Welcome to Downton.
Hello there. Emma speaking. Welcome to Shall We Go Through, the Downton Abbey fan podcast.
What?
Hi, everyone. How are you doing today? I hope you are doing well. Still trying to find a new way to open an episode, but like that's... I can't find another one. Like, you know, when it's working, once you get the habit, really hard to just change it. But I hope you are excited to be here with me today. And we're here for a very animated episode, that I can say. Because today we're here to talk about episode 5 of season 5 of Downton Abbey. We're in the middle of the season, so obviously this is where we have like the climax for some storylines, especially one, like, oh my god, very, very excited. I think you know which storyline I'm talking about. And obviously I have kept this one for the end. I called this episode the one with the beginnings and the ends. So let's start, shall we? So we're going to start with some storylines that are not that are small, but like the part that they are taking in this episode are smaller than usual. So because we're going to keep, obviously, the bigger one for last. I can't help smiling because it's very angsty, but damn, I actually really like this episode. So we're going to start with Baxter and Moseley. Because if you remember what happened in the beginning of the season, Baxter, she has told her secret to Cora because Thomas, he threatened to do it. And so she did it first because even Moseley said, if you do it first, then it would be better. Whatever it is, it's always best if it's you who says tell the truth than if it's someone else. And so then Thomas, because he was angry, he said it to Moseley and they talk, and he didn't want to believe Baxter when she said it was all. For him, it must have been something more, to the story. You know, because she said that she stole a couple of jewelry from her previous employer and then she got arrested. But no, he's like, I'm sure there's more. And Cora thought the same. And she wanted to know the rest of the story. And so Baxter, she told her when they were in London. And then Cora, she told Baxter that she could stay. That's where we are. Obviously, Moseley is very pleased that Baxter is staying. We are too. And so in this episode, Moseley, he asks her if she would tell him the truth. Because now that her ladyship knows, so do you think that maybe you could tell me? And so she does. She tells him the truth, and like now that he knows, it's the same than with Cora. It makes sense, you know, because like, why would you steal, you know, if you were not treated badly? Or like, this didn't make sense at first, but when you know what happened, you know, that she did it because there was this man who used her, basically. And so he says that in his eyes, she's innocent because she was like, this man used her, and then it's his fault even if she went to prison. And obviously she doesn't agree because she said it to Cora that she has given up everything she ever believed in, every value that she had to please this man who did not deserve it. So in a way, just because of that, she deserved to go in prison. And so now it's almost like, you know, like she, well, now she's better, she knows better. But Moseley, he's really like, okay, now that he knows, he's like, okay, so I know that it was not you. It was not entirely the real you who stole, you know. I just love it when he says that, and she's like, well, I knew you would say that. But I think it's very sweet because at first he was a bit disappointed, like it was a shock when he knew the truth, when he knew what she did. And now that he knows the whole truth, he's like, well, that's not entirely your fault. Like, you know, he had a hold on her, and it's almost like she didn't have a choice. So we're back. I mean, we never left the Moseley Baxter thing. Not even sure what it is, actually. But now you see, like, it's like their relationship is like he was before. Because now it's even better because now he knows everything, you know. So, I mean, he's happy. She's happy. She's staying. We're happy. This is nice. And so to stay on this, we talked about Thomas, so let's continue on for his storyline in this episode, because it's starting to get really bad. Remember, last episode he came back, he said he had to leave to see his father. We know now that it's not true. He saw something in a magazine called Choose Your Own Path. And last episode, Baxter, she thinks he's trying to get himself a treatment for we don't know what technically yet. And she saw a syringe in the bathroom. And she has seen the magazine, so I think she is starting to, you know, add two and two together. Because first she thought that he was ill and that he was trying to continue the treatment at Downton. But because she saw the syringe and we can see that he's really not well, but she saw that in the magazine and she didn't have really time to read it, but she has read like at least the name of the article, so I think she might have added two and two together and might have an idea of what he's doing to himself. And so in this episode, Barrow, he is even worse. Like you can see, he really, I said last episode that he looks like a corpse, but he still does. Like it's getting worse and worse. And it's so bad that during dinner, Violet, she notices something and she asks him if he's well. And I just love how it's always Violet who notices things. Maybe it's because she's not here every day. So when something is very different, she notices it quicker than everybody else. But like, she's the one asking, and she even asks Hassan, you are not overtiring him, you know, like you are not making him work too hardly, I hope. And Hassan really is like, no, not that I'm aware of. And obviously, Thomas has to make this, he said something like, you are the picture of kindness or something like that. But you see it. He doesn't look well at all. Even, you know, the way he walks, like you see there's something. And Baxter, obviously, she wants to help. She tells him to stop what he's doing. She says, stop poisoning yourself. So she knows there's something. And obviously he says, just leave me alone. But everyone, even Mrs. Hughes at one point said, are you sure you're well? So you have a lot of people, I think a lot of people have noticed that he isn't looking well. Not a lot are actually asking him and want to help. But like at that point, I think you can see that there's something wrong. And you don't know what he's doing to himself. Like you don't know what he's like injecting himself. You can go on and on, but you just realize that whatever it is, it's not working, except making him ill, basically. And, well, obviously, we're going to continue on that storyline, but I really like the fact that Baxter really cares and she's worried and she will never stop worrying about him and caring about him. And, well, thank God for that. Bananas. Now, on a very less pleasant note, let's talk about Anna and Bates. And I think it's very sad because I think most of the times, it's never pleasant, their storyline. I mean, there has been storyline about them who were not very pleasant, but very interesting, that there was something nice about it. This one, I can't find it. Like, I don't know why Julian had to drag this Polly's business on and on with them, but I find it irritating. But let's talk about it. Carson had a note from Sergeant Willis saying that he wants to talk to Anna and Lady Mary. So getting fishy, because why Lady Mary? And so Anna tells Mary that the sergeant is here, but he's not here alone. There's an inspector from Scotland Yard. So this is getting bigger and bigger. You know, because it's not just a little, you know, investigation from the local policeman. It's from Scotland Yard, London. So this is getting much, much more serious than it was. And so Mary is in the library with Robert and with the Sergeant Willis and the inspector. And so they ask her some question about Anna, where Anna was when Mr. Green died. And she tells them, said, well, we were in London. I went to see Lord Gillingham. Then we had to get home because of the church bazaar. Well, she says, what happened? And they ask her if she has no reason to believe that Bates could have been further south than York. She has no reason at all. I mean, it's not like she burned the train ticket, but you know. And then it's Anna who's in the library with the sergeant and the inspector and Mrs. Hughes. The sergeant said, but why Mr. Carson wanted to hide the fact you were in London? And she's like, well, I don't think he wanted to hide it, he just forgot. You know, because it's not that big a deal for a lady's maid or valet to go in London. And she even supposed to go there the next day with Lady Mary. And so, obviously, the question, but did you like Mr. Green? So you see, it's taking her a lot to say, yes, I did. Poor Anna. And so then the inspector says, well, but he wasn't a huge fan of your husband. And says, well, you know, there's no accounting for taste. I think she plays it really, really well. To be honest, like, I have to say, because, you know, I think maybe because time has passed since the assault and it's easier, not maybe easier, but she is getting better at hiding it, I think. But I think she really played that well. But then the inspector says, don't go away. No objection for you going to London, but don't go away. And well, just hearing that, it doesn't sound good. Not gonna lie. And I know, like, the inspector, like, you see the way he speaks, that there's something, like, vicious in the way he is, you know? Like, I don't know if you know what I mean, like, you see it in his eyes, like, ooh. Anyway, Barrow is really interested into why there's an inspector from Scotland Yard here. And he asks Mrs. Hughes about this Mr. Viner. He said, why is he here? And he says why the police keeps asking questions to Mr. and Mrs. Bates. And Mrs. Hughes is like, well, who says they are? You see, Barrow, like Thomas, he has something in his mind. And she even says, well, why don't you ask him, the inspector, you know, instead of asking me? So maybe I will do it. And Mrs. Hughes really nicely says, do not make trouble. Like, please, for once in your life, just let this go. I said, oh, don't you think I shouldn't do my duty if I knew something? He said, no, I'm asking you to not make trouble. Because she knows that if he knows something and he wants to tell it, it's not about doing his duty. It's just about, like she says, making trouble for Bates. And I'm, again, really sad that this took this way with Thomas and Bates, because last time we had something huge around Bates and Thomas. Bates helped Thomas stay, you know, the whole thing with Jimmy who wanted to press charges, who wanted Thomas gone, and Bates helped him. Well, he didn't thought that he would actually help him stay, but, you know, he helped him. And the whole thing makes me very sad, but because he has something against Bates, not against Anna, and he doesn't know how serious the things are. It's not just Bates might have killed the man because he was jealous or whatever. I know I'm not the only one thinking that, and I'm going to say it again. I said it a lot last season, but because it's been a while since, you know, I did last season. But if Thomas knew what Green did to Anna, I think he would have been able to kill him himself. This is not a joke. I think with Bates, they could have made a plan, you know, to get rid of the man. But I am convinced that if he knew what really happened, he would let it go. He would even say, the guy is dead, who cares? Because I think deep down, he likes Anna. Anna has always been nice to him, even when he has not been to her or to Bates. I think she cares about him. Anna, she's nice, so that's who she is. And this is so serious and so much worse that I think he can imagine that if he knew, he would not go down that road. I am convinced about that. But then we have a very, very sweet scene between Anna and Bates in the boot room. Yeah, now, seriously, Anna and Bates, the boot room, that's the new place. Palmy hated that we never saw the boot room almost never before the assault, and now we see it everywhere all the time. especially when it concerns Anna and Bates. So they're together in the boot room and he asks her about the policeman and she just says that he asked questions, but like, you see that she's worried because, you know, when the police keeps asking questions, it doesn't really sound good. And I love it because he's really sweet. He says, no, nothing, I promise you, nothing bad will ever happen to you again. It's like, I make sure of that. I make certain that you are safe. And then we will live together with children all around us in our little cottage. Like, this is, I like it because now he's the one really trying to cheer her up and making things light again. Because before, she was always the one more optimistic about their future. And now, obviously, with everything that happened to her, it's harder to be cheerful about the future than it was. And this is just so sweet. And then he kisses her forehead. Like, it's just, it's very, this seems very, like, reassuring. Like, you are going to be safe. And I think this is very sweet. And I can't understand why there's so many Banna haters out there. Because recently, I've seen on Twitter, I know it's not called Twitter anymore, but I will not call it the new name. I refuse to. But I've seen so many people hate on them. They're like, how? That you don't really like them. I can't say, but like, hate, like, they're actually sweet. Like, I mean, right now, Bates is a much more devoted husband right now than Robert is, you know? So, but Thomas, at the end, he asks Anna about the policeman again, about the man from London. You see, he's making her uncomfortable, and I don't know why he has to do that. I think Thomas is really the kind of person. With Mary, they're the same. When something is going really wrong in their life, they have to make the others miserable because they are miserable. You know what I mean? Like, Mary and Thomas, I think, are very similar character because they are like that. When there's something wrong in their life, it's almost like no one has the right to be happy. I don't know if you know what I mean. And I hate it, but it makes me angry and sad when I think about Bates saying to Anna that nothing bad will ever happen to her again and that he'll make certain that she's safe because, well, bananas. Now, so we said that Anna is going to London with Mary, because Mary is going to London again, but this time she is going because we're done with Charles Blake. She even says that she will not see Lord Gillingham and that she has not changed her mind. And we're like, thank you. Every day that passes with her saying that she will not marry Tony is a good day. And so she has dinner with Charles and he says that he has a guest. And this guest is Miss Mabel Lane Fox. I like the vibe between them because if this was not under other circumstances, I think that Mabel and Mary could have been together. I know I've even read somewhere that if they were another time, maybe they could have ended up together. And you know what? I can't disagree entirely with that. She has a strong character that you see that even Mary, I think she likes her in a way, if it was, like I said, other circumstances. But so Blake had an idea. He says, you know, the thing is, Mary, she doesn't want to marry Tony. And Mabel, she does, because she loves him, apparently. Well, there's no accounting for taste. I mean, you know, you do you. And he's like, so the thing is, what we need to do is for you to get back to Tony so that Mary is free, because Tony then we realize that it's Mabel who's made for him. Obviously, Mabel, she's like, are you kidding me? So I am taking back like almost the garbage, the leftovers of Lady Mary Crawley. That's what you want me to do. And when you say it like that, it doesn't sound really nice. And obviously she is getting angry. And I mean, she's right. I mean, the guy left her for Mary. Now that Mary doesn't want him, she should have him back. Like, I can understand that even in terms of pride, it's, you know, it's asking a lot. And so she leaves. And I just love Charles. It's like, but what should we do with your food? And she's like, well, eat it. And I hope it chokes you. I just love when, you know, Mary's like, well, you had it coming. But so that's the plan, and you realize that Charles, he really wants to help Mary getting out of this Tony situation, but without even thinking, oh, I'm going to get Mary back after that. Like, he really is doing this as a friend. He's even a friend to Mabel, so I think he's doing it, like, because it's a favor for both of them. Both of them could win something in it, and I like it, actually. I really like Charles Blake. Again, for me, he would have not been a good suitor for Mary, but I really like him. So we have not seen Tony in this episode, which is a big win for us. But, you know, it's still not the end for it, but we're getting there. Now, we're going to talk about Violet. And in this episode, Violet is hilarious. There's not much about the storyline with the prince, but they're just funny moments that I had to put out there. And also a new storyline is coming, so I had to, you know. We need sometimes a bit of humor, because otherwise the episode would be unbearable. And it starts with the family having tea in the library. Rosamond is here, actually. So it's the whole family with Violet and Isabel. Rosamond is here. They have tea in the library. And Rose, she is reading the newspaper. And she reads about something very interesting. And because the whole thing, the way it's played out, it's funny, I'm just going to let you listen to the whole thing.
I say.
What?
Some man has opened a nudist colony at Wickford in Essex. It's called the Manella Group.
What do you mean a man's opened a colony in Essex?
Not that sort of colony, Mama. It's for people who want to take all their clothes off.
In Essex? Isn't it terribly damp?
Would that make a difference?
Well, yes, if you had no clothes on.
I just love how first she's like, a colony. And the whole thing makes me, like, I don't know, but the whole thing cracks me up. Like, it's just, even the way Robert says, no, it's for people who want to take all their clothes off. Like, just the way he says that, her reaction, I think it's very, very funny. And I like it when we start an episode on humor, you know, because it's a nice way, you know, to start an episode. Oh, and then one of my favorite scenes from this episode. Isabel is at the Dower House, and with Violet, they are puzzling. I love it when they're doing things like that, you know, like once they were playing cards. Like, I just love it. Like, they seem so cool. Like, you want to hang out with them. So they're puzzling together. And so they talk about some things that concerns Isabel. We're going to talk about it after. And they talk about something else. Pratt is a bit down because apparently Violet's maid is leaving. But again, the whole conversation is just so funny that, again, I have to give it to you.
Spratt needs something to occupy his mind.
Oh?
We both have an inkling that my maid Collins is on the way out.
Oh, I do hope not.
No, I don't mean she's dying. I mean she's on her way out of my house. She keeps talking about her mother being infirm. But I'm infirm. Why doesn't she think about that?
You're as infirm as Windsor Castle.
I love it because the way, you know, they said it, like, she's on the way out, and Isabel's like, oh my god, like, no, and Violet's, oh no, no, she's not dying, she's just leaving me. But just, oh my god, they are hilarious. They really are the best. Like, I love them. And also, after that, Violet tells her that Trimpy might have found the Princess Kurakin. Apparently, she's a nurse somewhere in Hong Kong. And I just love it because, oh, that's, Isabel's like, well, that's much better than what it could have been, you know, being a nurse, you know, it's better than, I don't know, being like a prostitute. And Violet's like, yes, just thinking about the princess, like emptying chamber pots and things like that is a cheering one. But I just love how she says that. And Isabel, she's very intrigued because she's like, okay, so you definitely do not like her, but why do you want to help her? And you know, Violet told her that is because she owes it to her. But Isabel, you see that she's like, what is the story behind that? Because there is a story, and we know there is a story. And I just love it that now it's Isabel who's very, very curious about Violet's life. And when we learn then later that she was right, like her maid is leaving, and Spratt is completely depressed, you know. And I just love when Isabel, she says, oh, you don't like change, Spratt. And he's like, I detest it. I mean, Spratt, drama queen, I do love him. I think it's funny, but this is the beginning of another storyline for Violet. Well, it's not just for her, but like the whole maid thing. Oh, this is going to get animated. So, like I said, with Violet, they talked about her maid leaving, about the prince and the princess, and they also talked about Lord Merton, because, you know, we're still in this situation. Lord Merton, last episode, he asks Isabel to marry him. And that was one of the greatest scenes of the whole show. I don't care what you think. This was one of the most romantic scenes that we had. This was so sweet. And she was taken aback because she didn't think that he was in love with her. Because he said it, you know, I have fallen in love with you. Like, just thinking about it, like, oh, I just love it. So at the beginning of the episode, when I said the whole family is having tea at Downton, Violet, she asked Isabel about Dickie. She said, oh, do you already know what you would tell him? And she says, well, maybe I should talk to him before I talk to you, right? Because at first she thought the whole idea ridiculous, but the more she thinks about it, she thinks it's maybe less ridiculous because she realizes that he really loves her. It's not just out of loneliness, like he loves her, which obviously changes everything. And so then Violet, she goes to see Dr. Clarkson, and they talk about Lord Merton and his so-called interest in medical. And he says, because you don't want Mrs. Crawley to spend her life with him, like she tries to, you know. I just like it when Clarkson asks, so do you think you liked her better when she was more middle class? And I was like, no, I'm not really sure that's it. So you understood her better. So yes, now I don't understand her. At first she's like, she wanted to let him down. And now maybe she doesn't. So she doesn't understand her anymore. Basically, she says that she would not do good being this great lady. I think it would go up to her head. Like, you know, it's our duty to bring her back to the world or whatever. And like when Dr. Clarkson says, and I just have how he says, can I ask you a personal question? And Violet obviously saying, oh, you know, I've been through wars and grief and whatever, so I think I can manage an important question from a doctor. He asks her if she might resent the change of position of Isabel if she marries Lord Merton. And Violet's like, I'm not sure I really understand your question. She has understood, but obviously she doesn't want to answer. But she says, but sir, we are clear on our duty here. Like, we have to save Mrs. Crawley. Like, it's so funny because it's like she is considering marrying a horrible person, you know? I mean, save Mary from Tony, yes, but like saving Isabel from Lord Merton, you're like, yeah. But I just love it how she even makes like a plan, like she's going to battle. I just love it. And so when Isabel is at the Dower House and they are puzzling together, Violet, she says that she would like to organize a luncheon with Dr. Clarkson and Lord Merton so they can get to know each other. And Isabel thinks it's a great idea because she thinks, oh, it would be good for Dr. Clarkson to see beyond his prejudice of Lord Merton's position, to see beyond that because, you know, he's really interesting to medicine. And obviously, so Dr. Clarkson and Violet, they have a doubt in his so-called interest, you know, in medical things and his interest in medicine. And so they do that luncheon. And Dr. Clarkson, where he talks a bit about, obviously, his work. And you see that Lord Merton knows about it. And Dr. Clarkson is like, oh, like you have an answer to everything I'm saying? But it's really not, Dickie doesn't do it in a way to make him superior, like, oh, I've read about it, like, no, it's more like he's interested. And he says, oh, I've not studied it, but I read a lot. And you see he's really interested. And, you know, then this whole thing about Spratt detesting change, and Dickie's like, oh, I quite like it, you know, I don't dislike change, like, it's good, you know, and we often forget that all our customs that we have today, most of them are from the Victorians, so they're not that old. And Isabel, like, they're really getting on really well together. And I love when Dr. Clarkson then speaks to Violet and says, you know, I don't think he's faking his interest in medicine. Like, I think he's really interested in it. And we have to say, they are well suited. And even Violet as well, I have to agree with you. So I love it that now, I think at that moment, things are shifted because they all have realized that they are well-suited, that Dickie Merton really likes Isabel, and he's not acting, you know, like, oh, I'm going to pretend I like things medical because she was a nurse. No, he really likes it. And so, yeah, I think this would change the way they see this relationship. And instead of trying to breaking it, it would start, you know, changing the way they see it. So I like it. And again, I'm such a sucker for them too. Like, I think they are well suited. And I think this is very sweet and very romantic. Now, let's go back to Downton and to our downstairs people. And we're going to talk about Mrs. Papmore. And this is a much nicer and lighter storyline for Mrs. Papmore than what she had in the couple of episodes back. You know, like the whole storyline with her nephew and her nephew not being on the memorial and all that. Now, time has passed, you know, and she does not resent Mr. Carson like she did. Because she wants to talk with Carson. And I just love when she enters his room and Mrs. Hughes is like, oh, do you want me to leave? She's like, well, I'd love to say that I have a secret that would not be suitable for a woman's ear, but I don't. I mean, she's so funny. I mean, again, she's so funny. I love her. And she says that she has a bit of good news for a change. And she starts by saying, an aunt died. Which, like, oh no, that's not the good news, but I mean, she made old bones, like, you know, like, she died old, so that's great, but I just love the whole, she died, that was not actually the good news, but the fact is that now she has a bit of money, she has inherited a bit of money from her aunt. And I just love how Carson, he's like, okay, keep going, and then Mrs. Hughes, they're just talking, like, says, oh, that's really nice of her of giving you the money. She said, well, they didn't have children and she was really close to my dad. So, and they're just chatting like they would do. And Carson is in the background like, oh yeah, this, I don't like where this is going. And so Carson's like, and you want my advice about what you should do with the money? And that's what Mrs. Papmore wants. And Mrs. Hughes instantly, she's like, oh, but you should ask Mr. Branson or Dr. Clarkson, you know, someone who is closer to the real world. And Carson's like, well, she's asking me. And Mrs. Hughes is like, yeah, but, you know, we live so far away from the real world. We don't know anything that's going on there. And so Carson's like, well, I will give it a thought. And he didn't take it well that Mrs. Hughes thought that he didn't live in the real world. Because then he asked her, "See, what was it all that about? You know, I mean, I am living in the world." And she says, yeah, but not like Mr. Branson or Dr. Clarkson are. I mean, we're still in our little, like, it's like, Downton is like a society in itself, you know, so, and obviously he doesn't take it away. He says, I'm going to think about it. And then Robert is in the dining room and he's looking at some builders for the village. You know, when he said that he wanted to make a plan to build houses that would stay in the same vibe as the village because to not destroy it, you know, all that, but he's looking to find the right builder for it. And Carson is here and they talk a bit about it. And he even says to Carson that they should all invest in buildings because, you know, fortune will be made out of it. Like, should invest in building. And obviously Carson, he's like, this has ring something into it. You know, like there's a little light that is popping here. Like, oh, nice. And so he goes to tell Mrs. Papmore that she should invest in building. I should invest in the building trade. He even says, oh, there's, because Robert said, oh, I really like the look of this company. And so he talks about this company to Miss Papmore and said, well, I hear their name everywhere. And Mrs. Papmore's like, okay. But then Mrs. Papmore, she talks to Mrs. Hughes about her investment. And I mean, that's so funny. She says that she doesn't really know about the bidding thing because she doesn't know anything. She says, I don't want to put my money on something I don't understand. And Mrs. Hughes is like, but why did you tell Mr. Carson that? And oh my God, Miss Papmore.
Because he's a man, I suppose.
I'm not sure that's a good enough reason.
Nor am I now. But I don't want to hurt his feelings.
I wish men worried about our feelings a quarter as much as we worry about theirs.
Now, Mrs. Hughes, ain't that the truth? So then Mrs. Patmore is with Mr. Carson and Mrs. Hughes in Mrs. Hughes' sitting room, and she says that she want to invest in a building. Now, this is a cottage that she likes. She's going to see it. And she thought that she could rent it at first. And then she could take some lodgers, making it like some kind of a bed and breakfast situation. Maybe when she retires, she could go there. Like, it could be nice. The cousin's like, but that's not what I said at all. Like, it's not what I was thinking. It's like, yeah, but I like it better. And that, I don't know, how she's like, yeah, but you gave her the idea, right? And I just love the eye contact with Mrs. Papworth. Like, yes, yes. Oh, without you, I would never have thought of it. Like, that's all thanks to you. Like, oh my God. I just love it because after that, Carson's like, oh, well, you know, I like to help when I can. I just love it because Mrs. Papworth and Mrs. Usdale really, they are enjoying this. And it's just, they are having fun because obviously it's all to not, you know, not hurt his feelings. I mean, they're just so funny. Basically, they are, to me, Mrs. Hughes and Mrs. Papmore, they're like the downstairs version of Violet and Isabel. They really are like that. Like, I just love them. They are incredible. And oh my God, they're so funny. Now, to continue on something a bit less funny, we're going to talk about Tom and Miss Bunting and a bit of Daisy, because this is all related. Robert and Tom are in the library before dinner, and they're having a drink, and they have a talk about Miss Bunting, but a nice talk for a change. I think this is a really, really nice talk because they're really, like, you see, Robert at this moment, he's not clouded by anger or whatever. He really says what he thinks, like what he really thinks, and he tries not to stay so, not to be so negative like he used to be. And so I love it when he says, but now with your time here, you have learned to know both sides of the argument. And he's right. And he says, you know, 5 years ago, would you ever thought that you could be friendly with my mother? And Tommy's like, well, I would not have believed it 5 minutes ago. And I really like it because he says, you know, I don't know where I stand because I have my views, my opinions, and she has some, we have the same, but he is between two words. He really is stuck between and he's struggling. But I really like it because you see that Robert wanted to talk to him in a really calm way because he has not doing so recently. And I think this was great. For once, Robert has used his brain, which is nice for it. It's nice. You know, from time to time, you know, because I love it when Robert's like, but you know, we don't want you to stay alone forever. But I like at the beginning when he said, so Miss Bunting is not here. He said, well, I don't think she will come here again. And he says, well, Cora would say you should if she thought it important to you. And I'm like, okay, so you can think, you know, because he didn't say Cora would say so just because she wants to get at me. She would say so because she thinks it's important to you. So he can actually think from time to time, Robert. Like, it's nice to have a brand and use it. Just do it more often. But you see that Tom, he's sad about all this. And then we see him with Miss Bunting and he's ending their relationship. I really love when he says, well, you're forgetting one thing. My wife was one of them. My child is one of them. And I don't despise them. And when she says, you don't despise them, really, he says, no. And like last episode, he told them that he did not hate them. And she told him, I don't want you to hate them. Why now she's like, oh, you don't, really, you don't despise them. Like, I don't understand this. Like, was she ever honest at some point? Because I don't get that, how once she says, I don't want you to hate them, and then she is even surprised that she says, oh, you don't despise them. If he really despised them, he would have left. He would have left with his child, really, if he really despised them. He does not, like, I don't understand it. Like, I don't understand her. And I know I've read some things about her where people were angry because she could have been a great character if she had been written in a nicer way, where not written by a man who's, because let's just say, Julian, he's rooting for the aristocracy and for the monarchy. So it feels like every socialist is not the best character he's written. Like, they always have some flaws. And in a way, he makes you detest them, like, disliking them much more than people from the aristocracy, which I think it's quite true. I'm sad because I think she was a really great character. Like, the intention behind her was interesting. I don't know what happened, but she just turned into someone unlikable. And I just like when she says, oh, so you mean you met them, I met them or me? I say, didn't you? And this is exactly what happened. Every time they talk, she had to make this big, like, statement every time that I am not part of them. And I still think she was being rude all the time. You know, they were taking her in, like, they were inviting her to dinner, to their own house, and she was just being rude. Like, you know, obviously this is, he says, I don't think black and white anymore. Because the world isn't black and white. You know, you have bad people on either sides, and you have good people on either sides too. So yeah, she thinks the way he used to think before, like Robert has said before, knowing both sides of the argument. So yeah, it was bound to end this way because we know Tom would have chosen their side just because of his daughter. And his daughter adores the family because she's part of them. So obviously he would have chosen them. So she was bound to lose in the end. Then Miss Bunting, she comes to Downton to say goodbye to Daisy. And Daisy, she doesn't like it. And she doesn't know the whole argument of this. She only sees Miss Bunting's side because she says Miss Bunting is leaving because Mr. Bresson does not stick up for her. He doesn't want to stand up to his lordship, and every time she gets into this house, she gets insulted. And Carson, when he hears that, like, well, I don't think that's how they would put it. You know, and I have to say that Daisy would take her defense. I'm like, okay, but there's a moment, girl, you need to know also both sides of the argument, because she was the one insulting them, more like than the other way around. But so apparently Miss Bunting says that she's leaving the school, like she had an offer for another job in a grammar school, and it's quite a nice step up. It's a nice, you know, opportunity, so she decided to take it because, you know, now that Tom has ended their relationship, it's best this way. But, you know, Daisy is angry. And I can understand it because it feels like that woman helped her see the world in another light, you know. She has shown her so many things that it feels like now everything is falling apart. And Miss Bunting, before leaving, says to Miss Patmore, please do not let Daisy give up her studies because she has real potential. And so she leaves. And Daisy then waits for Tom to come down. She waits in the servant staircase, and she waits for him to come down to dinner. And she tells him about Miss Bunting. And she's almost impertinent, you know, when she says that he's making the biggest mistake of his life. You're like, no, he's not. And she says, you know, you don't belong with them. You belong with us. We're the future. They're the past. You know, she loves you. I know she does. And I understand why she does that. But I feel like everyone is forgetting one thing, Sibby. He is not alone in this. He has a child who is half from the aristocracy, half from the working class, okay? But she's living with the family who's part of the aristocracy. They love her. They take good care of her. So he can't just act like this does not exist. Because he can't just run away with, like, Miss Bunting. Because he would never live without his child. And Robert would never allow him to take his child to go with Miss Bunting, you know, because Miss Bunting, what she wants to for Tom is for him almost to let go of that life here and start something new, because if you have no future, no, not with them. But what would you make of Sibby? See, she's the only thing they have left of Sybil. Like, this is like, you know, sometimes like, just think, you know what I mean? And the way Daisy talks, well, I mean, because I think she's young, so she has not the experience with the house and with meeting them and, you know, having real talk with them, than the others have, like Anna Bates, Mrs. Hughes, Cass, and Mrs. Patmore, because they all know that they are really nice employees. They are really nice people. Yes, they're far from the aristocracy, so sometimes you're like, I don't think Robert realizes sometimes how privileged he is. Like, he has the nicest position here, being a white man, the head of the house, an aristocrat. Like, he is the most privileged person in this house. That doesn't mean he's not nice, you know. Sometimes a bit dumb, we know it. And so I think the way Daisy speaks exactly speaks the way Miss Bunting does, because Miss Bunting, she doesn't like them, because she doesn't like what they represent. The way that Tom did, but Tom is like, yeah, but now I know them. I know the people behind it. It's not just, they're not just aristocrats anymore. They are each their own persons. You know what I mean? And Daisy, she's also making everything about a group, you know, like they are the aristocrats. So they're not that they deserve to lose the battle in a way, but they do. And you're like, yeah, but it's not that easy. Oh, if you know what I mean. Maybe I'm rumbling a bit, but yeah. And so Mary, then she's with Tom and they talk about Miss Bunting. Like, he even says that he has a choice to make. And she says, make the right choice for you, not for us. And I think it's interesting in the way that she is on his side, even if she doesn't like Miss Bunting and stuff. She really says, if you think this is good for you, then do it. But I think where he is conflicted is, like I said, it's because of his daughter. This is the thing that is really makes his choice harder, because if he was alone, I think he probably would have gone. But there's his child, and he's like, I can't just mess up with her life like that, because she loves the family. You know, she's growing up with her cousin and she loves everyone in the family. So, you know, it's more difficult for him to make a decision. So the next day, Miss Bunting is leaving and Tom comes to see her off, and he says that he'll miss her. And she says that she loved him. And she even says, you know, now I will not lose that side of me again, the side of the socialist one. And she's grateful for that, but she still thinks in the against the family thing, you know, and not in the I can still be part of this family and loving those people and having my own ideas for the world, you know. They kiss, and then she leaves. Then in the drawing room, Isabel, she talks with Rose and Tom, and she says, oh, how is Miss Bunting? Like, we haven't seen her in a while. He's like, and you wonder why? I said, oh, yeah, but it's not to have someone to argue with. You know, it keeps you on your toes. I mean, Isabel, I really like her, but he says, no, she has left. You know, she left the school. And he even said, like, I think it's for the better. And Isabel's like, oh, but that's so sad. Like, she's like, oh, I'm sorry. Like, this is sad. Obviously, Isabel would have been the only one who really liked her. And then Daisy, she says to Mrs. Patmore that she will not give up her studies. But Mrs. Patmore, she's not like, I think you should. She's like, I don't think you. She even says, like, you know, I never said you should, but she really wants to say, like, for Miss Bunting, I want to continue it. And I'm glad Miss Bunting is gone. But I'm also glad that Daisy wants to continue her studies. And so, nice time for my French words even, of the day. So, like I said, it's the end of Miss Bunting in Downton Abbey. And so Miss Bunting was a teacher and she works at a school. So I thought that would be my French words of the day for today. Yeah, I needed to wait for her to leave to make that my French words of the day. I know. But so, teacher in French is professeur. P-R-O-F-E-S-S-E-U-R. And, well, it's masculine if it's a man, so un professeur. And it's feminine if it's a woman, so une professeur. And you add an E at the end. So a teacher works in a school, and school in French, it's école, so E with an acute accent, C-O-L-E, and it's feminine, so it's une école. And I know that you have the word professor in English, but usually it's used for like university teachers, if I'm not mistaken, or in Harry Potter, they call all the teachers professor. That's the name we use in French, professeur. Technically, you have more than one word because it depends on the level and who you are teaching. But like if you are from like primary school, you would say professeur des écoles. So it's literally what the words I just said. And then you would just add where you are, you know. There's a lot of words, but they are like the more common ones. So teacher is professeur and school is école. Now, a happy storyline. Well, the beginning of a very nice one. And it's about Rose. We see Rose in a cake shop and she's outside. Well, she wants to get outside, but she has trouble opening her umbrella because she has two bags full of cake. And it's pouring rain outside. And there's a young man who sees that and helps her. And so he takes the bag while she opens her umbrella. And I love the moment when he actually sees her, really sees her. And she says, well, I can have the bag now. It's like, what? I wouldn't dream of it. Like, the moment he sees her, he's like, wow, that's a very beautiful woman. And then they talk. He wants to accompany her where she's going. She says she's going to St. Mary Magdalene's, where there's where the Russians are staying. And she's giving tea to them and they talk. It's really nice. He says that he has a bit of Russian blood. And so then she even says, well, maybe we should introduce ourselves, even if it sounds a bit weird, because usually it's other people who introduces you and not you who introduces yourself. And so the man is called Atticus Aldridge. And, well, there's something. And she invites him to take tea with her and the Russians. And it's nice. And so during dinner, Rose, she asks about Atticus Aldridge and the father is made Lord Cinderby. And she asks about him, just if they know something about them. And Robert says, well, I've heard something, like the title is new. And when it was created, it did a whole thing, maybe because, you know, they bought some place. Like, he doesn't remember why there was a scandal around the fact that the title was created, but he knows there was something. I say, oh, I don't know, it's just, you know, the sun's nice. And I know when she says that, you have Cora and Mary, like, smiling, like, uh-huh, the sun's nice. And Rose's like, oh, no, it's not like that. And you're like, yeah, I mean, the sun's nice, you know. And so then Rose is with her Russians and Atticus is coming to see her. He really came to see her. Like, this is so cute. And so because he's here, she introduces him to Prince Kuragin and Count Rostov. And she thinks it's a good way. Like, she says, oh, but you might, like, they talk a bit about, you know, the thing about the princess. And they say, well, but even if they found her, what did you do next? And Rose's like, but you can start over. Look at Mr. Aldridge. Like, his family came from Russia and they have made this life in England. Like, you can, no. And the moment she starts saying that, you see Atticus behind me, like, oh no, just don't talk about that. Don't say it. Like, he's uncomfortable. You see Count Rostov, like, his face starts like, yeah, when did they leave? And so she says the dates. And Count Rostov is like, well, they're are not Russians. They were not Russian then and they are not Russian now. He gets very angry. Prince Kuragin, he apologizes and he tries to get back to his friend. And Rose, she doesn't understand. What's the problem? And Atticus explains to her, I think he says that we're not Russians because we're Jewish. And there were two pogroms to get the Jewish out of Russia. And this is, you know, the two dates where his family arrived in England. 1853 and 1871 or something like that, around those time. I haven't noted that. Yeah, I was way too busy for the rest of the story and then for the history part, okay? And I just love the way he says that, like, he's like, I've just ruined it, right? And everyone's like, I don't understand. I mean, okay, you're not Russian now, but you're English, but you're still Jewish, right? Like, what's the problem? And the moment she says that, his face just changes. Like, he has this big smile and, well, he says he says that he's going to London to start a new job. But he asks her if she might go to dinner with him if she's ever in London. So she said that she might and she's really excited about it. And so you understand that now the scandal around this title by Lord Cinderby and all that, it's because he's Jewish. And you see how Atticus was. He was like, okay, now that she will know that I'm Jewish, like, my chances are ruined. And Rose, she's still, I love her because she has this no prejudice thing, because she's like, oh, she's maybe naive and she doesn't understand anything about why people don't like Jewish people, maybe. But I think also part of her is like, I don't understand the problem. you know, like, you're Jewish and, like, where is, what is wrong? And it just so, this, I just love it because the way his whole face changes when she says, like, what's the problem? And he's like, oh my God, I love you, marry me now. But not quite much, but, you know, almost. And I think it's really sweet. And, you know, and then at Downton in the drawing room when Isabel was talking to Tom and Rose was there about Miss Bunting, then she was sad about the whole Miss Bunting thing. And then she says to Rose, what about your young chap? And she's like, oh, he had to go to London. He's like, oh, I'm sorry. No, but I like him. He was interesting, you know, like he was not the kind of man you usually dances with. And she says about his family coming from Odessa and stuff like that. And Isabel's like, oh yes, it is interesting. But at some point she's like, oh, but what is this really sad conversation? You know, like she wanted to talk about nice things with young people. And, you know, they're like, this is very depressing. And I just want to say she's the only one who has good news almost to say, because she has a man who has proposed to her. So it's very funny, like the contrast between her and having this good news. And then Tom, whom like Miss Bunting has just left. And then Rose, who met a nice young man, but he has left too. Like, I think it's quite sweet. And oh my God, I don't know if you remember. A long time ago, I talked about really nice, you know, the nice men. You know, you have different nice men. You have the nice men that are written as such and say they are nice, but deep down they're not. Like, they have some toxic traits, like Tony Gillingham. He is depicted as a nice man, but you know he's not. And then you have the really, really nice men, the unproblematic ones, you know. And I said that I think that Evelyn Napier was one of them. The only problem was that he was way too in love with Mary and it would never have worked out, but we had him. I said that one of my favorite men of Downton, we have not seen him yet, but another one that I think is really a nice man and unproblematic one is Atticus. So I'm really happy that we have finally met him, because obviously I called this episode the one with the beginnings and the ends, because there's a lot of them. And this is definitely a beginning. Bananas. And now, because, you know, I like to, you know, we did talk about something not really nice. Now we had a really nice little storyline. Let's go back to something more angsty. Edith. Because poor Edith, you know, that's the common phrase. Rosamund arrives at Downton. And when she's here, she says that she wants to talk to Edith. She said, why don't you come to my room? I want to hear all about this farmer's child. Edith comes to Rosamund's room. And quick question, this room, this very red room, it looks like the same room Richard Carlyle was staying in and the same room Mr. Pamuk was in. Tell me if I'm wrong, but it's very, very red. Or... because maybe I have a doubt, or it's Mary's old room, because I remember that Mary had her room was more red than the one she moved in after. So tell me if I'm wrong, but like, that's the first thing that came to my mind, but have I checked? No, I was way too preoccupied by the rest of the storyline than just to check about the room, sorry. But if you know, let me know. So Edith is here, and... you know, just like when Rosamund's like, I'm not going to eat you. And Edith answers, well, but you are going to chew me up. And so she tells her about, you know, Marigold and the farmer and whatever. And Edith is like, but you knew I was going to bring her back. And, you know, Rosamund's like, well, I feared it. I just feel bad for Mrs. Schroeder, which was the lady who was supposed to adopt Edith's child. And Edith says, well, I've written to her and she has adopted another baby. So all's well here. Which is the problem is that Mrs. Drew doesn't want her to go back anymore because she is tired of Edith. And I really like how Rosamund is putting it. First, she says that she would like to see the girl. And Edith is surprised. She's like, really? Yeah, well, I've given up 10 months of my life to make sure she would come safe into the world. So yes, I want to meet her. So Edith says that there's like, the problem is Mrs. Drew, like she is annoyed at the fact that Edith is coming to see her. She thinks she's just a nuisance. I love how Rosamund is putting it, like, okay, so we have a situation that is a grave danger to your reputation, but you have no compensation, like emotional compensation. You are putting your reputation at risk, but then you have nothing from it because you can't see your child. So this is problematic. And so the next day, Edith goes to the Drews with Rosamond and she introduces Rosamond to Marigold and Mr. and Mrs. Drew. And obviously, it's a problem. Mrs. Drew doesn't like it and she gets angry. Like she even says to her husband, like, I knew this would happen. She thinks Marigold is just her doll and she's just using her and she doesn't really care for her. And during dinner, Edith is not feeling well. Like they are talking about something else, about the idea of a dinner cocktail, and Edith, she's just getting angry. She's not feeling well, so she leaves the room. And Cora, she asks Rosamond what it is about. She says, you know, she said there was anything bothering her. And Rosamond says, oh no, she's just very tired. She'll be better tomorrow. But Violet, she suspects something and they exchange a look like, uh-huh, you know something, don't you? And so, next day, Rosamond is at the Dower House and Violet wants to know because she says, I know you know something about Edith. And it's a very fun conversation, she really is her mother's daughter, and I just say that.
Tell me, what were you and Edith discussing in such a huddle?
Well, it is very hard.
Rosamond, you're addressing your mother, not the committee of the Women's Institute.
I'm afraid you've read somewhere that rudeness in old age is amusing, which is quite wrong, you know?
It's about the child, isn't it? That is the secret you share. We both know you are not leaving my house until I learn the truth. So shall I have a bed made up for you here? Or are you going to tell me now?
So then, Violet knows the truth. And Edith comes back at the Drews and she talks with Mr. Drew and he says it was a mistake to come, especially with her aunt. And Mr. Drew says, well, you can't come back anymore. Like he says, otherwise my wife would want us to move, giving up the farm, and we can't have that. And she's like, but what would we do with Marigold? Said, well, we take her with us. And she's like, well, I can't allow it. And she has nothing, she can't do, there's nothing she can do. Because if she wants to keep the girl, like her secret is dead. He says, like, you see, he says, that's not how I've planned it. You know, I didn't want things to go that way. And I'm still saying that this is his fault. He should have told his wife. Again, I'm not saying things would have been much better, but it would definitely have been better than now. Because maybe Mrs. Drew would have understood that Edith really cares about the girl because it is her daughter, and she would have reacted much differently than she is doing now. And then when she comes back, Violet, she says to Edith that she wants to talk to her. So they're together in the library with Rosamond. They talk about Marigold, and they want to send the child away. Edith is like, no. And she doesn't understand how this could be a good solution because she says, yeah, because Mrs. Drew is a problem now, so we take the child, we send her away, so you are better because this is just a Damocles sword over your head now, and then everything is settled. But they say that in a way like, it's easy, just do that. And it's like, this is not easy. Like, this is the worst thing. Like, obviously, this is the worst thing that she could have heard at the moment. And then during the cocktail party, Violet talks with Edith again and she says, what? I was just thinking maybe I could take her to London and live with her in London. Violet's like, don't be ridiculous. Like, just, it would never work. Edith, she keeps trying to find solution to be with her child and nothing is working. And everyone tells her that every idea that she has is a wrong one. So obviously she's just like, I don't know what to do. And I can understand how lost she must feel because everything has been such a mess since Michael has left, basically. So, yeah, poor Edith. Like, yeah. And at the end of the episode, she comes down to make a private phone call. She sees Mr. Papmore. She says that she wanted to make a private phone call. So she wanted to use Carson's phone. And she even says to Mrs. Patmore, I don't think he would mind. And she says, no, I don't think he would. So, well, I leave you to it and good night. And then when she makes a phone call, you know, she makes a private phone call to London. So this also does not announce something good in the way that she is making a call to London. And she talked to Violet about taking the child to London. And everyone is telling her that they are going to take her child away from her. The Druze, because said if you're coming, trying to come back, then we're going to live with her. Rosamund and Violet said we're going to take the child away. And she's like, I don't want that. Sometimes when you're desperate, you do desperate things. Bananas. Now, I made you wait long enough, and it's time to end this episode on the Breaker storyline and our little triangle between Cora, Robert, and Mr. Breaker. Because, like, remember last episode, Breaker came back. Robert was angry. It was also this Miss Bunting thing, and he said to Violet that Mr. Breaker keeps flattering her, asking her opinions on everything, which he does not. He said he does, but not at the moment. And, you know, he was angry, like, he says, well, you keep flirting with this odd salesman, whatever. He doesn't like Mr. Breaker. So, beginning of the episode, when they're all taking tea together, he says that he has a regimental dinner or something on Thursday, and then he would give his cocktail party the next day, so he wouldn't be here, he would stay the night. And he says to Rosamund, so you have to make do with Cora. The way he says it, even Cora, she's like rolling her eyes, like, great. And then she says, oh, and then he says, oh, and Rose and Edith, like, it's a bad thing. Like, really, Robert, you just have to make do with Cora. Like, it's the worst thing ever. I'm happy to make do with Cora. I can stay with Cora all day if she wants to. At least she can talk to me because I will listen, you know? Like, what the hell? The way he says that, it's like he is spending all his time with his sister when she's here. You know what I mean? Like, you know, they're very close together and they're having nice chat. Like, come on. Okay? Like, the way he says that, it's like it's a chore. You know? Oh, you just have to make do with Cora. I'm sorry if it's a disappointment, but like, why did he say that? Like, that made me so angry. Like, what is this? Anyway. And so they're together in the bedroom before going down to dinner. And they talk about Breaker and the fact that he will be back because he wants the pending photographs for his book. And Robert, obviously, is not happy about it. He's like, no, it's not that I dislike him, really. It's just this business has been going on. And, you know, he doesn't like it. That's basically the translation of what he just said. And he says, I'm not forbidding you to invite him. He's like, well, I hope not, no, because I already have. And his face, and you see he is angry that she has inviting him without asking him permission first. He doesn't like that. And he says, but because he says, I'm not going to be there. I said, well, because since you don't like him, I don't see why there would be a problem if you're not there because you can't stand the guy. And you see how angry he is that she has taken the liberty, in a way, to invite him without asking him first and to invite him on the day that he would not be there. So like I said, during dinner, they talk about the cocktail party they were going to give for the generals. And, you know, they talk about it during dinner. And so the next day, Mr. Breaker is here and Robert is leaving. And he has his mess kit, like his uniform, red uniform that I love. And most important thing, he has a cape. I just love this scene because he comes down the stairs, Mr. Breaker is arriving, and, you know, even Mr. Breaker says something that he looks quite splendid or whatever. And the way Robert stands with his uniform in the center, like in his house, it's almost like to make a statement in a way that I'm leaving, but this is still my house. And the way then Bates puts the cape on him, we have never seen that cape before. Oh, have we? And I forgot. I don't think, because where did that come from? Why do we see that only for 2 seconds? I want to see Robert with his cape, like, more. Like, why? Like, yeah. I like the cape, okay? The cape plus the mess kit have made a great impression on me, okay? And I just love when he's leaving, he said bye to Cora, and he kisses her cheek in front of Breaker. A bit statement like, it's my house, it's my wife, you know? And so then Mr. Breaker, he says to Cora that he's starting to feel like Downton is quite home-like, you know? And Cora says, well, you're very welcome as long as you behave. And she said that in a more joking way, but she means it in a way like, you know, last time you said that was beautiful, like you need to calm down, you know. And she is still doing it. Well, she enjoys the attention and she enjoys the flirting. Is she flirting back a bit? I think she might, but not something that's too improper, I would say, because every time he steps the line, she tells him. But she can't tell him in a really harsh way, because that's not what she should do, because she's the hostess, she should be very dignified or whatever. So she always tells him, well, in a dignified way, she says, you know, she told him, no, I doubt we can go out to dine another time, but I take the offer as a compliment. She says, you must not say such things, like when he said that everything is beautiful in Downton, including its mistress, when he was flirting too hard at the dinner table. So, well, if you keep saying another word like that, I will ask you to sit somewhere else. And now she says, as long as you behave. So she's literally telling him, nothing will happen. I like our conversation. We're not going further than that. We can be friends, not much more. She tells him. Yes, she says it in a really joyful way, but she still tells him, you know. So she has put the barrier. But yes, she still enjoys the attention because she has a husband who does not give her any. So who can blame her for that? Like, really? And so after dinner, when they're in the drawing room, and then so Cora was talking with Violet, and when the men arrive, so Tom and Mr. Bricker, Violet, she leaves Cora alone with Mr. Bricker, but, you know, she even says, oh, you did not stay very long, you know, because they were drinking porters. That wasn't very long. Like, oh, we were just couldn't wait to join the ladies. And Violet, the way she looks at Bricker, and at them, she's like, this is a very disapproving look. She's like, I don't like the sound of this, you know, but she has sees it, you know, the way Bricker is flirting with her. That's what she even said to Robert, but don't you ask her opinions? And he said, you know, sometimes. But like I said, she's the hostess, so it's her way to make people feel great. She's doing nothing wrong, literally. And I keep saying, she told him no in her way multiple times. If he can't hear it, that's his problem. But then we have a problem, because then we see at night when everybody has gone up, Bricker in the gallery in his pajamas. So you're like, oh, great. And then he sees Baxter coming out of Cora's room, and Cora is in her room, and Bricker comes in. And the whole scene, I'm going to put it to you after, but just before that, to have the tension, because when that happens, you're like, oh my God, you have the same face as Cora. But then we see that Robert is back home. And you have this parallel editing again, when, you know, parallel editing is when you see there's a succession of scenes that happen at the same time. So on one side, you have Bricker being in Cora's room. And on the other, you have Robert being home and coming up the stairs. And so I'm going to put the whole scene, so it's only be audio, you won't have the visual, but I mean, technically you have seen the episode, so you have it. I'm going to put the whole thing, because I think it's probably best than just me saying it.
It's not your maid. I waited till she'd gone.
You must leave. Mr. Bricker, you must leave.
I hope I didn't wake you.
No, not at all, my lord. Miss Baxter's only just come down, so her ladyship will still be awake.
Mr. Bricker, I've asked you twice now. Will you please go?
You said yourself. Who knows when I'll be back?
Mr. Bricker.
Don't pretend, Cora. You know something's happened between us. You know things have changed now. I feel it, and I know you do. When did someone last cherish you? When did someone even listen to you? I've seen you with your family. Ignored and passed over.
None of this is any reason.
I'm glad you're still awake.
The dinner was over early. It seemed easier to come back. I'm sorry if it's a disappointment.
It isn't. Mr. Bricker is just leaving.
I'm not here at Lady Grantham's invitation.
Then will you please leave at mine?
Robert, let him go.
You can't be surprised. When you chose to ignore a woman like Cora, you must have known not every man would be as blind as you.
And then they fight. So before talking about the fight and things that happened after that, let's talk about the scene. So like I said, Bricker arrives in Cora's room, and you see Cora. She's not pleased. She's shocked. She's shocked and she's even afraid the way she said it. You must leave, Mr. Bricker, you must leave. She doesn't even think twice. She's like, you have to go. And we're like, leave. What are you doing here? I think the worst part in this is how he entered without even knocking, without asking her permission. He just came into the room like, ooh. And then you have Robert coming home. And I think the worst part in this is when Carson says, well, you know, because he says, oh, we finished early, so it was better to come back early. Robert, he comes home. And the worst thing is when Carson says, well, Miss Baxter has just come down, so her ladyship will still be awake. And Robert's like, oh, cool. Like this, he's almost happy to be like, oh, I'm coming home. Maybe you could have a talk. I don't know what could have happened, what he wanted to do. If he maybe thought during him being away how badly he had treated her. I don't know, but he came home early and he wanted to see his wife. Don't know what he wanted to talk about or whatever, but, you know. And then Breaker, the way he talks, and I hate it when Cora says, I've asked you twice, would you please leave? And he's still there saying, but things have changed between us, you know. And, well, he noticed the whole thing. He noticed that obviously no one is listening to her and paying attention to her. But she even says, this is not a reason for you to just barge in. And then Robert comes in. You see Cora, she's like, oh, shit. And you see Robert's her because he starts off, I'm glad you're still awake. And the way his face crumbles. So I have no idea why he's glad and he's happy that she's awake. Because, you know, things have not been really well between them. So I don't know if the fact that him being away made him realize that he has been a fool, maybe, and he wanted to, you know, make things up right with his wife again. That's why he's so cheerful when he arrives. And then, well, obviously not happy about what he's seeing. And you see how he's angry and his eyes goes from Mr. Bricker to Cora. The way he says, I'm sorry if it's a disappointment. He's like, I think even the Pauline thinks she invited him when I was not here because that's what she wanted to do. And Cora, she doesn't... Well, she's surprised that he's here. Obviously, she knows this is really bad, but she really wants him to go. She wants Bricker to go. And so she says Bricker is leaving, and Bricker obviously is leaving. And Robert doesn't want him to go. And she says, please let him go. And I think the moment he was maybe ready to let him go, but what Bricker said was too much. Because I think what Bricker said made him realize that all of this is true. You know, when he says, you know, it's because he ignored her that this happened. And I think this hurt Robert much more than just finding Bricker in her room, is the fact that he is right and it hurt him. Because maybe, because we don't know what he had in mind when he came home early, but maybe he just realized, I said, I've been a fool, whatever, and then someone is just saying that to his face and this is too much, and the fight. During the fight, fun fact, most of you probably know, but Hugh Bonnery cracked Richard E. Grant's rib. And I think you can sense when it is, because at the moment he really cries, you can hear it, Mr. Bricker. And you're like, oh, that's probably the moment his rib got broken. But apparently he said that it took them 2 days to shoot. I can't remember how long it took them, but it took him a while. And, you know, one walked out with a broken rib. Then Edith is knocking at the door, panicking. Says, Mama, Papa, is everything all right? So Cora, she invents a lame excuse. But you see Edith's face. And I know that Cora and her lamest excuse, saying that her father and I were playing some sort of game and they, like, the lamp fell, like, whatever, like, everything's fine. Worst excuse ever, Cora. But I know a lot of people joke about Edith's horrified face as if, you know, like, parents game, like, something, you know, sexually, like, some sexual game, whatever. But if you stay very serious for a second, when she knocks on the door, she's panicking because Cora has been shouting, stop it, multiple times. And that's in a playful way. And I think she's horrified. And the fact is, she doesn't even know that her father has come home. So she thinks her father is in her room because who else would be? But what if she thought something really bad was going on? I don't think she would say that maybe, like, they had the fight, like, Robert Cora had the fight, like, a violent one. Maybe. I don't know. But she knows that her parents have not been getting on the best lately. But I think her horrified look had nothing to do with what Cora said. It was more like she was really scared. Because from the outside, it was scary. You know, you hear generally people having a fight and Cora literally was shouting, "Stop it." So it's actually, I think this whole thing is much like sad, and I think she was very, very scared for her mother at that moment. And I even say she didn't know her father was there. So I think she said papa in a way that, because it sounds, who else would be in the room? You know, who else would be in a room, in Cora's room? Except Cora, it would be obviously Robert. But she doesn't know that Robert is there. So obviously then Cora says this thing about they're having a game. So she's like, okay, dad is home. But like, dad is home, but she doesn't know. I don't know, tell me what you think about it. But I don't, like, the worst thing would be that she thinks that maybe Robert is just beating her up, which would be absolutely awful. But like, you know, she looks scared. But then so she manages to let her, like, she then Edith goes and Mr. Bricker is leaving. And Cora tries to lighten up the mood, saying, you know, what a night. And Robert is very, very, very angry. And he says that he'd be in his dressing room. And, well, I can't blame Robert entirely to be very angry, because this is, you know, this is a very bad situation. But now I also have another question, is do you think Mr. Bricker would have left if Robert did not come into the room? I have weird feelings about this, because a part of me thinks that Mr. Bricker is not like Pamuk, because obviously those two situations are quite similar in a different way, that Mary was openly flirting with Pamuk and that is not a reason for him to go to her room, that's sure. But like, the way they were acting was different, and Pamuk was very the kind of guy that really was like, would not take no for an answer. So it's not even a shock that he came into Mary's room, and well, then he paid for it because he died. So are we sad about it? Not really. Not, again, not saying that because she flirted with him, said that he had any right to come into her room. Not saying that. But the situation have a bit similar in the way that how it happened. But I don't think Cora even really flirted with him. Well, we don't know what happened when in the scenes that we did not see. Because she always tried to tell him no, gently. And the fact that he came into her room without knocking, without asking, and she asked him to leave more than once, and he did not. And he said, you know, things have changed between us. And I'm getting really tired of men thinking they know more about women's feelings than they do. Because you don't. I'm really getting tired of that. Between Gillingham saying that to Mary that she is in love with him, and you're like, how do you know? You're not her. Him saying, you know, things have changed. You have no idea what she thinks, you know? And I'm getting really angry and I'm tired of it. Because I had nothing against Bricker, except that I thought he was a bit too flirty or whatever. But this is just too much. Like, he has stepped, like, why did you think we would have been invited into Curzon? Because he came in for only one purpose, going to bed with her. We know that, because, you know, who knows when will I be back? Like, this is our chance to, like, be together, and almost, maybe it's like Gillingham, and after that you would know that I'm the one and you would, like, run away with me, or I don't know. But, like, really? I feel even sorry for Cora, because Robert said it, that Bricker was only interested in her because he wanted to go to bed with her. This was very insulting, obviously, and I still think that Mr. Bricker might be in love with Cora and that he likes her, likes the way she talks about painting, likes her company and all that. But the fact that in the end, he still wanted to go to bed with her. You're like, oh boy. It's almost disappointing, because Cora really thought that she had someone who wanted to talk with her and wanted to have a reconnection with her. And in the end, he wanted what most men want. Anyway, and so a part of me says he's not like Pamuk in the way that very pushy the way Pamuk was. If you compare the two scenes, Pamuk really did not take no for an answer. So he would have gone through with it, whatever happened, Mary gave in. But I'm pretty sure if she would have said no, he still would have gone with it. Let's not even talk about Green, because that's not, you can't even compare. But I don't, part of me thinks, I think Bricker would be like that. But the fact that she asked him twice to leave and he did not makes me angry. And that he was like, things have changed, you know, and who knows when I'll be back. So let's just have sex, basically. And I'm like, great, that's nice. You see how Cora, she was so shocked and even scared that he was here. Like, no man has been to this room except Robert. Well, except the doctor and a servant or two, but like, it's not the same, you know. And I'm so angry, because this man just used to make her feel great, because made her realize that yes, she has a brain, she can use it, wanted her company, she talked about her, which she never does, like, he listened, and then he ends this way. Like, he thought something and he was mistaken, and he thought that he knew what she was feeling, and he did not, because men need to stop thinking and then know exactly what women are thinking and feeling. Like, ugh! I'm sorry, this is a very, very long shot, but I really want to know your take on that, because I'm very intrigued, because it feels like there was, I don't know, I'm very intrigued by that. And I'm not completely angry at Robert for not wanting to talk with Cora, because I can sense how hurt he must be at that moment. I am not saying that as an excuse for him, because I still think that he's partly to blame in all this. But Robert is the kind of person who sulk and who broods and who pout and who stay in his corner and not say anything. And that's the problem, because he doesn't really communicate. And so the next morning, Bates asks Anna if she has a bandage. And she says, oh, did you hurt yourself? No, it's not for me. So you're like, oh, yeah. Well, we know for who it is, because Robert really did punch Bricker. And I just, also, tiny thing, but I don't think Bates was there the night before. It's almost as if, because he was late and Robert thought that he would join his wife, he asked Bates to come home, to go home to his cottage and say, you can go back tomorrow. Because the fact that Bates only asked for the bandage the next day, Paul me thinks that because he was not there the night before, he said, I can manage tonight, go home because it's late, and you can come back tomorrow morning. Oh my God, now I want to know the conversation. Because they know that Bricker is leaving in the morning. Robert has a hand, like, you know, he has been in a fight. Like, I have to say, the whole Bricker storyline, Paul me wants to know every conversation Bates and Robert had, because the servants are not blind, and this is actually very this could be very interesting. Anyway, so that's just a fact. So Bates asked Anna for bandage. And we know, we're like, we know who got hurt. Well, mostly who is the one who gave the punches, but yeah. And so they prepare the house for the cocktail party. And you see Bricker leaving. And when he leaves, he gives something to Carson. So I don't know what it is, but I assume it was money, like a banknote or something. I don't know why he did that, like just to say thank you, be discreet. I would love to hear your take on that, because I don't really know what this is about, like what he gives him. And yeah, I think this weird, but then he leaves and Cora is looking at the window, like looking him leaving, like want to be sure that he's leaving. And then it's the cocktail. And this is, well, not going well. So Cora and Robert are the one welcoming all the guests. And Cora tries to converse with Robert. She even uses, small talk. He ignores her, like, definitely. And you see him after shaking the hand of a man that you see that he has a bandage on his hand, that his hand must hurt him. And you see every time she tries to talk to him how crestfallen she looks, like, I don't even know what to say. And the first time this happens, Mary notices it. Mary, she's like, there's something wrong, because he generally is ignoring her. And it's not just the fact that he's ignoring her, it's the fact that the way she looks when he does. And Tiny note, Mary's dress that she has at the cocktail party is one of the dresses from the dress show. When, you know, last episode she went to a dress show with Rosamund, and even the dress, when she looks at it, she was like, oh, yummy. And that is a dress that she's wearing at the cocktail party. But she notices it, that there's something wrong. And I like the fact that she's usually the one who notices things that are wrong. And next, again, something else. Cora says something about being jealous of a lady's purse and tries to, you know, light up the mood, make some jokes. And Robert, he doesn't care. He's very angry. He's like, I'm going to just act like you are not here. And my heart is breaking for her because she's trying. And Violet sees that too. And it's just, I also try to think, because this is the night, that means they haven't spoken all day. I mean, I don't even know what to say. What I feel very bad about is that she certainly now thinks it's her fault. Because that Cora is usually like that. Everything happens, she usually thinks it's her fault. But also the fact that back then, that, you know, we usually blame women for absolutely everything. So now she would think it's her fault. Because I think she is thinking, what did I do wrong for making Mr. Bricker think that he was allowed in my bedroom? And I think she's also thinking about what Robert said about the fact that he was just interested in going to bed with her. And everything, I think, is just going around in her head. And she wants to talk to Robert, but he doesn't want to because he's hurt in his pride and whatever. And I'm angry at Robert too, because nothing happened. You know, I mean, you must have known nothing happened. They were like, the bed wasn't even, you know, like no one stayed on the bed and they were dressed. So nothing happened, Robert, okay? And trust your wife for a second, because if I remember correctly, something happened and something even worse might have happened. Like a couple of years ago when he felt neglected, I'm going to say that a lot. But, you know, like think for a moment. Like I even want to say, Bates, can you just remind him of what happened? Because we know Bates knew. Come on. Like, do you think it was just a coincidence that he knocked on the door when he was with the maid? I mean, come on. I think Bates knows. Oh, he knows much, much, much more than he lets on. But I'm really, my heart is broken because Cora, she tries and she, I think at that moment she thinks that it's the end, you know. And she would even think that it's her fault when it's Robert and Mr. Bricker. Like, she has done nothing wrong. And I'm very, very sad. So now it's time to end this episode on my music of the day. And it's not Taylor Swift. Yes, I told you at the beginning of the, when we started this season, that this season will have almost all Taylor Swift except for one episode. And it's convenient, like, it's very convenient because it's the episode of the middle. And I did not make that on purpose, actually. You know, I did not. But I was like, this is just, it was meant to be, you know. So... yeah, obviously sad song because this is very sad. We never struggled for a conversation till you couldn't find the words to say. Now I'm a calmer in your explanation of your learning curves and your mistakes. They say that it should be a celebration, but I'm still crying in a cubicle. I wish you felt the way you used to. I wish you'd made me feel beautiful. You're the one that got away, and you got away with a lot. They say it's better to have loved even if you lost. But I can tell you it's not, cause I feel hollow. This hurts so loud, further than doubt. Oh, you left. So that was Hollow by Maisie Peters. And this is Cora right now. Okay. Everything is just, the poor girl is feeling hollow right now. Okay. And well, I have nothing else. I mean, you've listened to the songs, have nothing else to add than the lyrics that we're just saying right now, because the lyrics speak for themselves, I think. But because it's true, they do not talk anymore except for fighting. They never had a really proper conversation. And every time she tries to have a conversation with him, he just let her down, like he shuts her out. Why? You know? And someone said, I'm just a comma in your explanation, in your learning curves and your mistakes. And they're like, just, yeah. And you are the one who got away and you got away with a lot. You got away with cheating, Robert. You cheated. Okay, I'm going to say it again in case people forgot, but you are the one who kissed a maid 3 times and you wanted to go to bed with her. And the worst part was you had a position of power over her, so this is even worse. And your wife just had a nice time with a man who, yes, maybe thought there could have been something more, but she never wanted it. So what Robert did was much, much, much worse. And it just, yeah. So, I'm angry at Robert, obviously, and I'm just, my heart is breaking for Cora right now, because I just can't help imagining that she is thinking everything is her fault, and she doesn't know how to make her marriage work again. But the problem is that it needs to break a marriage, it needs to try to build it up again, you know, and Robert doesn't feel really keen at the moment to do it. But I still have, I don't know, a feeling that when he came home, maybe he wanted to patch things up with her. I don't know about you, but it's the way he was like, I'm glad you're still awake. So I don't know if it was just to talk about the evening who was boring, or I don't know. But because I'm really optimistic and I love Robert and I want to believe that sometimes he can think, that maybe he thought, maybe this is the night I'm going to, you know, because he patched things up with Tom, you know, when he had a real nice conversation with him. So maybe he thought, maybe I should have a really nice conversation with my wife tonight, and where things didn't go according to plan. So yeah, I don't know. I need to stop. I feel like I've been talking about them for hours, but I can't talk about them for hours. And yeah. So now that the breaker storyline is over, I mean, not over, but like half finished, let's just say that. Well, now that Simon Bricker is gone, because we're never going to see him again, I can tell you where I knew Richard Ingram from. You know, remember I told you in episode 2 that I had a bad feeling about him and I didn't know why. And I knew it had something to do with the fact that usually when it happens, it's that I have seen this actor in something else, and if they play like a bad character or a villain or something, then usually it's why I don't like them. The first time I watched Downton, even when I was wondering where did I see this actor before, I did not look it up until I finished, because I was so afraid of being spoiled. It happened to me once on the show that I was watching, and I just wanted to check something about an actor, and then literally next to it, like the character was like, oh, like die in season whatever. And I was like, I don't want to see that. So when I watched Downton, I never looked them up. And the thing was that it was around Halloween, because I watched this movie every Halloween, I watched The Corpse Bride. And The Corpse Bride is one of my favorite films ever. It's a film by Tim Burton, and I absolutely love this film. I know usually I have the feeling that The Nightmare Before Christmas is more famous than this one, even if it wasn't actually directed by Tim Burton. But I have a feeling it's always more famous, but The Corpse Bride is like everything to me. And when I watched Downton for the first time, I've been watching The Corpse Bride in original version, so in English, for a while now, because, once I tried and I preferred it anyway. And so I was watching this, and you know when the film starts and you have names of the actors coming on the screen, and sometimes I pay attention, sometimes I don't, but let's just say that my eyes catch sometimes names that I know. Well, you know, in the movie you have Johnny Depp, Anna Baum Carter, Christopher Lee, Emily Watson, Albert Finney, well, a lot of people. And then on the screen it's written Richard E. Grant. And I was like, oh my God. And it just, everything was, every little pieces were back together. Like I added 2 and 2. Like the whole pieces were assembled together, and I knew it. Richard E. Grant is the voice of Lord Barkis. And if you have watched The Corpse Bride, Lord Barkis is basically the villain. I'm not saying too much because if you've never watched this film, I don't want to spoil you, but like, it's really the character, you see him, you know, not a good one. So that's it. You know what? The funny part in A Moment in the Film, there's a scene where his character says to the parents of Lady Victoria that the fact that he let go of their daughter is like, it's criminal because their daughter is like magnificent. And if he would be her husband, he would treat her like a queen and whatever. But I just love it because I actually rewatched this recently and I was like, oh my God, what he says is almost the same thing as Simon Breaker says, you know, when you choose to ignore a woman like Cora, you can't expect every man to be as blind as you. And it's hilarious. Like, and there's also another scene, like, I don't want to spoil you, but where there's like a meal, like a banquet, and they are at dinner and he says something about beauty and clever. Like, at the beginning sounds a bit like Robert's speech at their anniversary, but it is not that at all. I mean, if you haven't watched the film, you probably have no idea what I'm talking about. But if you haven't, go watch this because it is magnificent. I adore this film. And yeah, but I just, yeah. So that's it. It's because it's Lord Barker. So it's basically, it's the character that I've watched this film since I was like 10. So it's, yeah. And I was like, oh, I know why I don't like you. Which is funny because I've seen him then in other things, but because that's how I discovered Richard E. Grant, was through his voice and not even through like his face, which is quite funny. And I'm very like, it's really weird to say I'm into voices, but like I can recognize someone by their voice if it's something that I've watched since I was like a kid. So yeah, that was just it, just to say that that's where I know him from. So I know it's silly, but I just wanted to say it. And if you have not watched this film, go watch it. It's just so beautiful. So that's it for this episode, the one with the beginnings and the ends. You know, we had the beginning of like Rose and Atticus. This was the beginning. You have the beginning of some new storylines, like the whole thing about the Violet's maid. Only the beginning of the whole Anna Bates and the problem with the police was still continue, but you have also the end of Miss Bunting and Tom and the end of Mr. Breaker. But it's not the end of the storyline because this would go a bit on, but it's the last time we are going to see Mr. Breaker. And we have, I don't know if it's an ending or a beginning for Edith, but it's like both. There's something that has come to an end and there's some kind of a new beginning. Don't know if it's right or wrong, but yeah. So that's it for this episode. I hope you liked it, that you had a good time. Or like I said, if you were angry, like you shared your feelings with me. If you want to share your feelings with me, don't hesitate to send me a message anywhere. I would love to hear your take on everything I just talked about, especially the whole Breaker thing, because I really need to talk about that with people. Okay, so if you want to, I would love it. And yeah, and so I will see you. I hope you liked also this little break from Taylor Swift, because it, you know, Tay Tay is coming back next episode and it's going to be there until the end. But I mean, you already know if you've been listening to this podcast since episode 1, well, technically 3, you know Taylor Swift. This was just an excuse to put some Taylor Swift and to link Taylor Swift to Downton Abbey, basically. Anyway, so I will see you next week to talk about episode 6 of season 5 of Downton Abbey. And until then, stay safe, take care of yourself, and don't forget,
vive la différence!